Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKedesh, is daf Kuf Tes Zayin. So we were holding in the middle of this machlokas about whether we need to be choshesh for someone else by the same name in the event that we find a get, we find a contract. And we were talking about the question of if it's comparable to a loan, or if it's very different because nobody would give over, as a buyer was claiming, there's no problem over here because a loan document is never given for shmira to someone with the same name. A person doesn't allow it to fall. And therefore there's no chashash. If he gave it to someone else as a check to cash, then mili mimsra mashliach. And therefore we don't have any kind of problem in this case. So we had this machlokas between a baya varava, which surprisingly we find that they actually switch their shitot. A baya varava actually, in a very similar case, seems very similar, flip their positions. And in this case, what happened was that they found a get in the city of Sura. Now, in that get, it was written as follows. Sura Mata, in the city of Sura, I, Anan Barchia from Nahardaa, did hereby pitarit vitarichet plonit intati. This is the standard language of a divorce. So he basically said, I divorced my wife on such and such a day in the town of Sura, and they find this document. Now it's lying on the ground. So this, a woman who was married to this guy by the name of Anan Barchia, in Narda, she claims, gentlemen, what's going on over here? This is my get. I need my get. And the question is, shall we give it back to her? Now, we know it didn't fall from him because it's talking about over here that it had a henpeck. A henpeck is a kiyum of the Adim's signature, which the court would have put on only after she had presented it. So it definitely was not the man's get that had fallen from him before he gave it. But the question is, might there be someone else by that name who has a wife by that name? Or might there be some other hanky-panky going on over here? Some of the shitas of the Tesis bring even the possibility that maybe someone else by that name wrote her a phony get, just in order to mess up her life with her husband, whatever it is. The chashash is, can we give a get back to a person because we're assuming that, well, the names match, and that's all we need. So as we saw yesterday, we need to do a bedika. So they did. They did a search from the entire area between Sura and Narada. There was no other Anan Barchia, except for one. But that one, they felt they didn't have to worry about. The other one, whose name, Anan Barchia, he did not come from Narda. He came from Chagra. And over here it said, Anan Barchia Narda. So he called himself a New Yorker, so to speak. Well, if he had just moved from Chagra to Narda, like the other Anan Barchia, who happened to be living at that time, the Havim in Narda. He was renting a place in Narda, but he wouldn't have called himself a New Yorker, right? So because of that, they were chayshish, okay, I mean, maybe he did call himself a New Yorker, but witnesses had come, and they said, see the date on this get? Well, we could tell you 100% that on that day, and it says the get was written in Sura, this other guy, Anan Barchia, the Chagra guy, he was with us, and he wasn't even in Sura on that day. He was in a different town in Narda on that day. So what do you have to worry about? So Abaya says, oh, man, even though I said in the other case that we had yesterday that I have nothing to worry about, we were talking about this case of the Yitzchak, the Resh Galus, and all of that. There's nothing to worry about over there. So I say that over there, I said we did need to worry. Over here, there's nothing to worry about because we found out exactly who there was. And we know from witnesses that on that day, he wasn't even here. And how could he possibly have had it get written in Surah if he wasn't there? If the Edim saw him in Nahada, what would he be doing in Surah? Whereas Rava says, well, I say just the opposite. Even though I was not worried about the other Yitzchak, the Resh Galuta, and so on that we don't know about, I agree in this case that we do have to worry about it. Why? Because over here, Hochach Hashinam, because we know for a fact that there was another Anan Bar Chiya. So what do you mean we're not worried? So you're saying, well, we have witnesses, he was in another town. Okay, first of all, the fact that he's in another town doesn't prove anything. Because what if he happened to be driving a Tesla and he managed to get from Narda to Surah faster than you're used to? So you're saying he couldn't have made it from there in an hour, could he? Yes, he would. If he was driving at 150 kilometers an hour, he would. So maybe he got there with a flying camel. Nice name for a car. Or maybe he had his operating license and he simply operated there. Inami Bikvitsa? Or maybe there's a very simple explanation. Maybe all that happened is that he had arranged for the get to be given beforehand. So he gave it over to a sofer as a shliach and told him to get the get witnesses and get it signed. So it was commissioned. And that is the reason that it said that I did hereby give, because that's the halacha. Because Rav said to the sofrim, there were a lot of halachas that Rav gave over to the sofrim that the Gemara brings. One of the things Rav gave over to the sofrim to do properly is if you are in the town of Shili, there were two little towns next to each other, one was Shili, one was Ini. If you're in the town of Shili and you're writing any kind of get, a get, remember, doesn't only mean a get nushim, but you have some kind of contract, then the contract has to reflect the place where it's going to be signed. And therefore, if it's going to be signed in Shili, then write Shili. Okay? Even though, and if you're in Hini, write Hini. Even though you were told about the commission in the other town. So let's say you're in Shili and you were commissioned in Hini, or you're in Hini now, write Hini, even though you were commissioned in Shili, because what you are writing there in the place is the place of the signature, not the place where you wrote it or where it was commissioned. Now, the question is, why is that so important? And the Gemara never explains why it's so important. But, I mean, Lamaisa, the Rif uses a lashon of Mirzik Shikra. If the Edim sign in a different place than it says that the shtar was, then it looks like it's not accurate. So anything that's mirzik shikr is possible in a shtar. That the Rif writes, that's the Rosh. As a matter of fact, they're even goritz it in the Gemara. There's other Rishonim that bring that the issue is that we want to know where the Edim were. So some say we want to know where the Edim were so we could be Mekayim the signature, because probably that's a place where people would recognize it. Others say that no, it's simply an Eitzah Teiva to avoid problems of Hazamata Edim. That's, somebody says, Oto Ayom Imanu Hayitem Bashili or Behini, whatever. So they don't have to argue and say, what does that have to do with it? It wasn't signed there. So give them the place where it is. That way we can actually know if the Edom are Kshayim or not. But as far as where the Sofer is, makes no difference. Where he's actually writing this contract is irrelevant. What's important is the day that it will, where the Edom will be on the day that it was signed. That's the point. Anyway, so all of this, if you recall, was just a brief break in Sesame Street. Remember? We were talking about the guy who wanted his sesame seeds back. And the question was whether this got us into this whole conversation. So the question was, do we have to consider, in a case where we seem to be able to identify things pretty well, do we have to consider that maybe the original is no longer there and this happens to be something that is exactly the same as the original. That's how that got us into contracts, and it looks like the original, and so on and so forth, right? So getting back to Sesame Street, my havayala d'shum shemani. What indeed is the halacha? Does the grouch get to keep the barrel with the sesame seeds, claiming that he bought another half a kilo of sesame seeds, or does the poor guy that gave him the sesame get it back? So Rav Yemar Omar, he gets it back because lo chashinam, we do not take into consideration the possibility that the grouch had gone and gave him back his sesame and happened to buy exactly the same amount. Whereas Ravina says, no, it's not true. If somebody says he got the same amount, so then we are chayish and we cannot give it back to him. The halacha is that indeed the grouch does not have to give the sesame back because it is a standard identifier, half kilo package, and therefore it's very possible to use the same exact barrel and deposited the same amount of sesame. Okay, so now we're getting back to the Mishnah. Until now, we've been talking about the war zone problem. Now, let's concentrate on the fighting problem, the fighting between the man and the woman. And the question is whether we can believe her if we know that they were having problems in their relationship. Now, the Mishnah says, if there was kitata bein olaveina, that then we cannot trust her. And we're worried that she's even going to lie, as we'll see, which was not our worry in the case of Omar Kedomi. So we'll have to see how far we're willing to be chayshish. Now, when you say that they're fighting, what does that mean that they're fighting? People are always fighting. I mean, it means that what? There's like just a lot of arguments between them? What does it mean? Hechi dami kitata beino levina. Omar of Yudam Shmuel, it's talking about that things have really gotten bad. And we hear this woman telling her husband, I want a divorce. Bomeret lebaala gershani. Says the Gemara, do you ever hear a woman that didn't demand a divorce at some point or another? Of course, every woman says that. Kulo nami amroch. They get mad. And the best way that they could prove that they hate your guts is, give me a divorce. Okay, so you overheard the 976th time that she yelled, give me a divorce. Who cares? Bottom line is, it's absolutely amazing how, like, down to earth these issues. So that does not prove anything, says the Gemara. What proves that they're fighting? Oh, you're right. You're right. Okay. Elabo merit lebaala gerashtani. It's not that she says, give me a divorce. She actually goes and she claims that he divorced her and she really tried to get out of it and it was a lie. I mean, that is pretty desperate. Wait a minute, what do you mean it's pretty desperate? If a woman says to her husband, Gerash Tani, she's believed. Because Rav Amnuna addressed exactly that case. Lahamna mina Rav Amnuna. Rav Amnuna said, famous halacha, that a woman who says straight to her husband's face, Gerash Tani, ne'emenet. Because once upon a time, there was a certain amount of decorum in human relationships, and a woman would not be me'izapaneb if Nebalat to be so incredibly chutzpahdik to say an outright lie right in front of her husband, say, you gave me a divorce, when such a thing never happened, is just inconceivable. Therefore, he must have given her a divorce. Now, of course, in our terms, such a world is inconceivable. Nonetheless, we need to believe that it once did so exist. But in any event, why in the world would we say, therefore, she lied about getting it? Let's believe her that she got the divorce. No, you don't understand. The case was, she told her husband, you divorced me in front of these two Adim, and she gives their name and their telephone numbers, and we call up the Adim, and they said, what the heck is she talking about? There was never no such event. Lo hayu dvarim me'olam. Okay, so then we know that she's lying. And that is a pretty outright lie, to say the least. So in that case, she is obviously desperate to get away from him. And if that's the case, if she's ready to lie, so then if her husband was reported missing and so on, she's also perhaps going to lie, or perhaps she's going to jump very quickly to conclusions. Well, it makes a big difference, doesn't it? So what's the underlying reason? Is that we're chashish that she's literally lying? So my time at diktata. So Rabbi Hanina says, yeah, she may outright lie because she may hate him so much that she doesn't even care about the terrible penalties and consequences of his walking in after she goes and marries somebody else. She's willing to risk it all and lose all her money or whatever as long as she gets away from him and never has to see him again. So she's happy to be asura on him. So she's really ready to lie. Rav Shimi bar Ashi Amar, well, no, not ad kidei kach. I mean, that was the whole idea of these draconian consequences. We said that that would actually put a woman in a position where she's going to do her best to find out. So she wouldn't actually lie, but she's much more likely to jump to conclusions, says Rav Shimi bar Ashi. So she would more likely be Amra Bididami. She will say what she's persuaded herself is true, even though she has jumped to conclusions. Okay, and the difference between these two approaches? Well, the difference would be, says the Gemara, where he was the one who was always fighting. She is not ever expressed herself with such depths of hatred. So Rabbi Hanina, who says that the issue is she's going to lie because she's desperate to get away from him, well, that wouldn't be true in this case because she's not ad kedei kach. She's not the one who's constantly fighting and demanding a divorce and so on. And so the most we could be chayshish on is that there would be the problem of Amra Bididami. Masha Enkein, according to Rav Shimi bar Ashi, so if that is the issue, that she's Amra Bididami, so then that's enough of a problem to be Amra Bididami. So now, if that's true, let me ask you something. If that's true, what would be the din of an Eid Echad in the same situation? How would we view that? Iboilu. Eid Echad Biktata Mahu. So here we've got another question. This is a question, of course, that we raised earlier. And that would be that the Eid Echad is believed, remember, because of a combination of issues. On the one hand, remember, we brought the Rambam, that even midiraisa, we don't really need Shnei Eidim in places where it is absurd to assume that someone would put himself into a situation where the man that he says is dead walks into the room in the next minute. I mean, people are not going to do that. And therefore, the place where the Torah demanded two Eidim is where we do not have access to the truth, where ultimately we have access to the truth, we believe it. So, okay, did we rely on that alone? No. Because we made, remember, the klal. So because of the issue of our very much wanting to avoid a problem where a woman is caught bi'igun and is impossible for her to marry again, and she's going to be living alone her whole life, in response to that danger, we were gozer this idea that where we can rely on a woman who would do her research properly because of the consequences. So then we basically were trusting her. Now we just had our Mishnah. Here's where we get to these problems, because in the earlier Perek Ha'isha Rabbah, so over there we talked about the Eidim. But in this Perek of Ha'isha Shalom, as it's known, in this Perek we're talking about her own Ne'emanut. Now there's really two different issues here. When it comes to the Eidim, did we need to also incorporate the fact that she would be reliable to do an investigation? Because if so, then over here, she's obviously not reliable. We said she is actually anxious to get out of this. So what would be the din of an Eid Echad in this sense? Is the main point, time of the Eid Echad Behemah, is really because of Milta de Avida Ligluya Lo Mishakir, something that we can find out about, we don't really have to have two Eidim for, because it will be so obvious if the man walks in who's supposedly dead and buried, they are going to be in very poor position in terms of their ne'amanas. So then if that's the case, certainly we're not going to be chayish on the Eidim over here. Nochanami lo mishaker. Or is it all based on the fact that the time of the Eid Echad Behemah is because we are incorporating in that ne'emanut the fact that he daiku min asva. The woman, in order to avoid the consequences, is going to be careful, and we just said that in this case she will not, because zocher kiven de ita ktata lo daiku min asva, she's not going to be properly careful. Interesting question. Take him. We leave that up. Now, Rabbi Yehuda, he goes all the way and he says, there's no way that you can believe her unless the evidence points to a tragedy having just happened. The woman walks in, her clothes are torn, her hair is disheveled, she's in tears, she says that her husband just drowned. Well, we shouldn't say drowned, because we had that case, of course, it was a complex case. She said her husband just died, and then we would believe her, but not where she's commonly discussing her husband's demise. Tanya, Amrula l'Rabbi Yehuda. So they said to Rabbi Yehuda, let me ask you something. So according to you, if you have someone who is capable of those type of reactions, then she's capable of having a life. But if there's something wrong with her, she's on the spectrum, she doesn't ever react emotionally to situations like that. So she is on some level a shota. So she can never get divorced because she doesn't have those types of emotive interactions. Does that make sense to you? That's how some learn. Other learn. Someone who is a pikachat, she's a good actor. So she'll always be able to get divorced because she could put on a good scene and make it look like she's in a terrible shape. But somebody who's just a simple person, when we say shota, we mean shota for such things. She can't put on an act. So if she doesn't put on the act, she can never get married. I mean, this makes sense to you that it's going to be a function of how much she can emote? It doesn't make sense, said the Chacham. Ella, therefore, we say the halacha is we cannot look at her ability to act or to emote. Achat zo, achat zo, tinase. Okay, there's certainly no problem. Now, there was once a crazy story, and this is very nogel lemaisa. A woman walks into the Beis Din of Rabbi Yehuda, claiming that her husband died. So some of the Talmidim that were there, they say to this woman, listen, before you go in to be judged by Rabbi Yehuda, what you need to do is put dirt all over your face, tear your clothes, let your hair down, and look like a wreck. And then he'll give you a heter. This is like the ultimate lawyers, right? So they're going to tell you exactly how to act. It's all a fake. They're going to tell you to put on an act in order that the jury should potter you, you know, or in this case, that Reb Yehuda should be paskel. That's crazy. How could that be? Alfua shikra? I understand. Are they teaching a woman to lie to the Beis Din? How could they do such a thing? I mean, if they're there in Reb Yehuda's Beis Din, so don't they want the Beis Din to come out with the halacha correctly on Libra Reb Yehuda? No, you don't understand. They did not hold of Reb Yehuda's psak. They actually paskin like the Rabbanan, and they knew that this poor woman would never get a heter to marry. Because once she goes to Reb Yehuda's Beis Din, he's going to say, well, you look very calm about it, lady. We don't let calm people discuss the death of their husbands. And then she's going to go somewhere else. She's going to say, well, you already appeared in the Beis Din of Reb Yehuda. We can't argue on that. So this is a tragedy. So therefore, they tell her, look, Reb Yehuda has his own approach. It is not correct lahalacha. And therefore, if you want to come to this Beis Din, you're going to have to do all of this shtick before you go in, because otherwise you're not going to be able to get married. Now, it's very interesting that the post can bring from here that there clearly, therefore, is no iser in creating a case where you know what the halacha is, and it's not like the way that this Beis Din is going to paskin, and you're telling someone to make a case, obviously not outright lies, but you can tell them how to say something, how to present something, and that's not considered to be alfu shikra, which is a tremendous chiddush. But this is exactly what the Gemara seems to be saying. That's because they hold Kirabanat Svirlu, and they told her, this is the way, if you want to be able to marry, if you want Reb Yehuda to be matter you, this is what you got to do. I mean, if you want, you can always go to another bezdin, but if you're going to come in here, this is the only way you're going to get out of here alive. Okay.
Yeah, because of this particular case or all cases?
Sorry?
This particular case of Agonis, it's terrible, so maybe that's why there's an answer like this, not all other cases.
It's possible. I mean, it's part of the discussion, whether, but I mean, you still need to be able to come out with the underlying reality that you're not doing an Isser and telling people how to present. What's the difference how powerful the reason is and the need is, you know? Okay, we are ready for our very own Sir Richard, who's not even sitting outside watching the moose, or is it the meese, not watching the deer, not watching the rabbits, nothing at all. Just... All right, go for it, Sir Richard. Thank you. So, we were talking about, first, remember, in Aisha Rabbah, we talked about where the idea was that the Edom came. Here we were talking about a woman went overseas. Now, we, in the first Mishnah, introduced the halacha the way it evolved over time. But this is not the way that it started. It started, actually, with the assumption that since Ein Dover Sheba'erev HaPachas Bishnayim, we would need two witnesses, and there's no possible way we're going to believe the woman herself. I mean, that's crazy. So we're going back in time now to this Mishnah, which discusses the initial opinions of Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai, and we're going to see how this halacha evolved. So, Beit Hillel Omrim, Lo Shamanu, look, we did hear this, that there are places where we will believe a woman, and remember, we've already seen in the introduction to this Mishnah, we already seen what happened with Rabbi Akiva, when he was shocked to discover that actually they had long determined in Bavel that they should believe, and they have a Kabbalah, and that it has to be given over to the Chachomim in Eretz Yisrael. There's a Kabbalah to be Matir Nisha, and so on, Apiyed Echot. So obviously there had been some very serious issues about this, understandably, in the history of being Matir Nisha from Igun. So what Beis Hillel says, look, the only Kabbalah that we have about this heter is we'll believe a woman like the case that happened. Now, the case that happened, we're going to see later. But that case was where she had gone out to the place where in the field everybody was busy and they were harvesting. And she comes back from that field. She says that her husband got a sunstroke or a heart attack from the work and the sun, and he died. And we went out there and we checked it out, and it's checkable. So that's where they started believing the woman. And that's the only kind we heard it, that it's a woman who comes back from a local field in the same area, and then we would believe her, as we're going to see. And that was Kimasa Shahaya, that we're going to see the events that happened in the Gemara. And that's when the Chachomim said, well, yes, we should actually trust the woman without needing to chase after the Edom. I mean, it's a local event, and since it's theoretical traceable, then we can trust her. Whereas Omrulahem Beit Shammai, I mean, what do you mean? We only heard when you come back from the harvest. Okay. I mean, like, what do you mean? You're talking about comes back from the harvest, you know, but not coming back from harvesting the olives, chas v'shalom, that's all different thing, really. So it makes no difference. You come back from the grain. You come back from the olives. You come back from the grapes. Achat haba min habatzir. Don't you understand yourself that obviously it would make no difference? So if that's the case, in the same way that the story involved a particular point, it happened to have been the grain harvest, you certainly are not going to claim it's only true if she says he died in the grain harvest. So the same thing is true. It happened to be that it was a local harvest. But who cares? Achas haba mimedina lemedina. This was what happened, okay? The case that happened was what you're saying, but it has no bearing on the halacha. Lo dibru chachamim bakatzir ela bahoveh. The only reason we talked about that case is because that's the case as it happened. Over here, the word bahoveh does not mean the standard case. It means bahoveh bahavayata, as it happened. And then, chozer beit hillel lo horot kebeit shammai, that we, in fact, will be mekabel it. Tanya. So here's a bright that expands on these conversations. Omrulim beit shammai le beit hillel. So according to you, I mean, you honestly mean that we're stuck with the way that the Maisa happened, right? How far are you going to take that? So l'divreichem ein li ela k'tzir chitim? How do we know? What if it was a harvest? It was even a grain harvest. Maybe it was barley. Surely from the barley fields, you're not going to believe them. I mean, come on. And ein li ela k'tzir? How do I know botzer? How do we know what you're being botzer grapes? Or you're being mosaic olives, or you're being goder dates, or you're being oder figs. I mean, come on. Remember that in Lashon HaKodesh, every type of harvest has a different word that refers to it because it's done so differently. Clearly, says Beit Shammai, it happened to be that the event that we based it on was the katsir of chitim, but surely you agree that hu adin lekulo. Well, the same thing is true about the location. Hachanami, ma'aseh shehaya ba'ota medina. It's true it was a local event, but that does not mean that the takana that we made to believe a woman is only a local din. Who went in the kulu? Even if they went overseas. And Beit Hillel says, well, how does that follow logically? I mean, I understand that clearly there's no difference. I'm not an idiot. Of course, there's no difference between wheat and barley and grapes and so on. That's not the point. But here it makes a major difference because Bota Medina, the Shrichi and Shemirtat, there's people that are going to be coming into town and the woman is not going to lie if she knows somebody's going to tell her. They're going to walk in and say, he never died. He told me he's sick and tired of his wife and he moved to Timbuktu. I mean, we don't have that when they went overseas. So she's not afraid. So lo shichinta, she's not afraid. Maybe she would even lie. So lo minertat, and therefore we cannot rely on it. Forget about Amra bit a dummy. She might even lie. So this was the beginning of the issues. And what did Beit Shammai say to that? Beit Shammai, come on. There's always people coming back and forth. Listen, even though you're taking your life in your hands, getting on one of those aluminum cigar tubes that they shoot through the sky and don't give you any service on, people do it anyway. So you see that people are willing to take grave risks in order to visit their kids. Okay, so we'll find out. She's just as scared. Well, you think it really matters how easy it is for us to research it? One day somebody's going to come in and say, what do you mean? Her husband is alive and well in Durban. And therefore, we would have exactly the same reason to rely on it. Okay.
The normal salt caravan from Timbuktu was 500 to 800 camels. A shayara from Timbuktu of salt.
500?
800 camels carrying salt leaving Timbuktu. That's the norm.
Wow. Okay, so we shouldn't make so much fun when we say he came from Timbuktu. We always use that. Where'd she run away to? Yeah, he ran away to Timbuktu. I hear. I forgot that Timbuktu is Rabarnea's neighborhood, and we will immediately know everything that's going on. Okay. Anyway, what was this Maisa Shaya that we keep referring back to? The Omer of Yudah Meshmua, it was towards the end of the Ktsir Chitim. Shilfei Ktsir Chitim Hayu. And 10 people went out to harvest their wheat together. And a snake bit one of them. Nishacho Nachash Lechad Mehem. And he died. His wife comes and she tells the Bezdin. And they went out to find out whether it was really true. So, v'sholchu u'matzu'u kidvarea. They found out that was exactly what happened. So at that point, they realized that there is no need for us to have independent corroboration, and that Aisha Shamra, Meit Baali Tinaseh, Meit Baali Tityabem, we can even be matir the brother to be miyabem her based on that, even though he doesn't know. And I mean, should we even allow him to believe this woman that he should be miyabem her? Yes. It isn't just like we had before the question of, well, how can they do it? They're misupik. And we said it's talking about Dafka. It was the Edom themselves. Maybe that would be allowed to marry her. No, actually, she's believed, even the Gabi the Yavam. Now, the idea of the Katsir, by the way, even though it sounds weird, but Lamaisis, Tosis brings over here, there is a reason why the Katsir is unique. And that is because of sunstroke. So because at the time of the Katsir, and of course it's based on the Pasuk, because remember the whole story that we have of Triat HaMitim and running to Elisha was because the child says to his, out with his father, and it says, El HaKotzrim. The little boy went out, Vayetze El Aviv, El HaKotzrim. All of a sudden he starts complaining about a massive headache, and he says, Roshi, Roshi, sends her back, sends the child back home, and he dies. So what happened over there was obviously sunstroke. So therefore, says the Gemara, we talked about Katsir because at that time of the year, it's extremely likely you're out in an open field, and that if you're not very careful to have Barnea around to make sure that you're constantly drinking, so then you may end up dead. And okay, but I mean, if you're underneath the palm branches, you're not exposed to the sun, or maybe you're between the grapes and it's much later in the year and it's cooler, whatever. So there are grounds. It's not as if this whole thing was a joke. It was, in fact, based on the Pasuk. Okay. Anyway, that's a fascinating aside that the Yerushalmi brings out. So therefore, the idea over here should be exactly the same point, Tainas Beit Shammai, and the Maase Shehayah, that was the Maase Shehayah, but nonetheless, we made a takana, Aisha Shamra, Meit Baali, Tinaseh, Meit Baali, Tityabim. Now, the machlokas that we find seems to be a machlokas that took place between Rabbi Hananya ben Akiva and the Rabbanan, which we have learned before and we're very familiar with. And this was the famous story, which is Nogea, this week's Parsha, of course, which is, if you're going to be carrying the Mechatas, can you move it in a boat? Okay, crazy story. So we had a machlokas over there. The Braita said, "Lo yisa adam mechatat ve'efer chatat ve'yavirem bayarden ubasvina." A person is not allowed to carry water that was mekudesh for the chatas or the ashes of the chatas in such a way that they need to be in a boat. Don't put them in a boat and don't cross the Jordan River. Not only that, don't stand on one side of the river and shoot them over to the other side of the river. Don't float them over the water. It's usur. Don't. And you cannot have them any way that they would be in mid-air. Unless the animal or your friend is actually walking on the ground and not floating on top of the water. And the same thing is, however, not to be applied on a bridge. Because if you're walking over a bridge, then you are walking on the ground. You're not in midair over the river. So the only problem that we have is that something cannot be suspended over the river. We view the boat as suspending over the bottom of the river. Happens to be supported by water, but basically, I don't care whether you're in the air or you're in the water, unless you're actually touching the ground at the bottom of the river. And it makes no difference whether we're talking about the Jordan River or some other river. That was the takana. Rabbi Hananya ben Akiva, Amir, nonsense. Lo Amruela Yarden. First of all, it is only the Jordan River. And it was only in a boat, not in an airplane, not in throwing it over the water, only a boat and Kimaaseh Shehaya, because that was the story. We'll talk about what the story was, but you all remember it. Now, that seems to be exactly the words that was going on between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, that it's only like the story. So is that the point? That according to Beit Hillel, the idea is that when an event occurs, we pattern the takana on the specific event, and that would mean that the Rabbanan over here disagree, and they made it more universal. They were going like Beit Shammai does over here, who says we make it a universal takana that will believe a woman. And on the other hand, Rabbi Hananya ben Akiva, who said that it's a, what I meant was that the Rabbanan, they say that it's universal. They're going like Beit Shammai, Rabbi Hanina ben Akiva says, only Kamaaseh Shehaya, he was going Aliba the Shita of Beit Hillel, that we're only going to believe her in the exact circumstances. Seems to be the same words. Amrilach Rabbanan, of course not. Ananda Amrinan Afke Beit Hillel. When we said that it has nothing to do with the Jordan River, it has nothing to do with particularly a boat, that's true even according to Beit Hillel. Because Beit Hillel was talking about the basis of the Gezerah, and we are not. Remember, Beit Hillel explained the reason why he feels it should be limited to somewhere local, because we want her to be afraid of exposure. And exposure is far more likely where there are people locally that know what happened. Fine. There it makes sense. So she's saying, in a mokum karov, she is mirtat. In a mokum rachok, lo mirtat. But what does that have to do with the case over here? Well, you really think it makes a difference whether it's the Jordan River or the Po River? I mean, it's exactly the same issue. So I don't understand. Of course, it has nothing to do with this machlokas. This is not based on logic. Okay? Over here, it's mali yardain, mali shar naharot. We are obviously not really chayshish. Rabbi Hananya ben Akiva would say to you, and I agree, that of course things are universal. I would say, I would agree with Beit Shammai over here, but Beit Shammai was only saying it because since she would be Medayeket, he's simply saying the logic is she would be Medayeket anyway because of the fact that we have these caravans that are coming. Mali Mokum Karov, Mali Mokum Rachok, over here. The nature of the takana is called a takana mishum ma'aseh shehaya. And therefore, mishum ma'aseh shehaya needs to be kima'aseh shehaya, biardein, bisvina. There where the event actually took place, that's where the Rabbanan made their takana. What was the ma'aseh shehaya exactly? Well, the Omer of Yoram Arav, it once happened that there was a guy who used to transport mechatas and averchatas in the International Chatas Transport Company, and he would have this boat, and the boat would take it across the Yarden to make it available to people wherever they would need mechatat, or even averchatat, ready-mixed averchatas, which was sold by this company. Now, the problem was that one day, it was found that the boat had actually belonged to the mafia. There was a dead body at the bottom of the boat. And all along, all of the chatas that he was transporting was ruined by its exposure to Tumas Mace, a disaster fitting only for Zot Chukat HaTorah. All you poor folk in South Africa are a week behind the exciting Daf Yomi's relevance. So, in that case, Botasha Amru, a person should never transport mechatas and eferchatas in a boat across the Jordan River. So, this sounds very funny. But of course, this is a very common thing. There is a whole set of gezeros that we find in the Gemara that are called gezerot mishum ma'aseh shehaya. One of the most famous, of course, is the sandal ha-mesumar, And the other case, also, which was interesting, was with the sandal, where they ended up being metame, the sandal. We had a chagiga for Kadesh and so on. We had the halacha of the tikkun of, you know, where two chachomim were running up the kevesh, stuff like that. There are things that happen where we make a takana. Now, sometimes the thing that happens is a giloy that we should make a universal takana. So we're attacking the payasot, let's say, so that people don't end up being vicious in the competitive spirit in the Beis HaMikdash, which is also very nogea, of course, our planned work on the Churban, to remember that story. And there are other times when it really doesn't make any sense. The Gezerah doesn't make any sense at all as an application of a principle. Now, those are the Gezerahs that are really called Mishum Ma'aseh Shehaya. And as the Chazon Ish points out, we will never be passing something. It's always a lichatchila if something was done against the takana of a Ma'aseh Shehaya, because the purpose of the takana is essentially to establish a memory of something insane. So remember, the Rabbanon are only gozer in a mokum d'shchiche, correct? They didn't make gezeras in weird situations. So the chances that a boat belongs to a mafia is ridiculous. I mean, for us to actually make a gezera, don't transport mechatas in a boat, you never know if the boat belonged to the mafia. That's crazy. However, we are interested in establishing an extra special layer of concern when it comes to the mechatas, correct? So by making this crazy takana, just remember, if you're crossing the Jordan River, don't take a boat. So then that means that people will always be on edge about the even strange possibilities, which we cannot make a gezerah for, but we want them to remember that they should worry about. The same thing is true about a sandal mesumar. What are the chances that you are going to get caught in a movie theater where somebody yells fire and everybody tries running out wearing with cleated shoes and end up killing each other by jumping on each other with cleats? I mean, come on. But that was the Ma'aseh Shehaya, essentially. And we do want people to be super duper sensitive to what might happen. So we are koveya, particularly strange halachas, which people say, whoa, that is weird. What's that all about? Well, it once happened. So that way, we don't have to make a takana on something that is lo shechet, which is against the overall idea of mishmeret. But on the other hand, we are koveya in people's minds on their own a super sensitivity to issues that we feel need sensitivity. So the same thing is true over here. That has nothing to do with the Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai discussion, where we unfortunately use the same language, Kamaisa Shehaya, but this was not a takana based on a Ma'asa Shehaya. It was a takana that was triggered by a Ma'asa Shehaya. That is a different issue, and it got us thinking. The same thing is true when we made the mistaken assumption that people will have enough respect for the Beis HaMikdash and enough concern for human life that they won't shoot another Kohen who's going to outrace them in the Beis HaMikdash. It's too insane. And once you see where things have descended to, then you indeed make takanas, because God only knows when such a thing could happen again, if in fact it happened twice, as the Gemara talks about.